Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3. The game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezvik here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our good friend Sean Rourke from NHL.com. Sean, what's going on? How are we doing?
Good, man. How are you?
We are wonderful. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Been a busy playoffs for Sean Rourke. And Sean, you spent a lot of time around the Colorado Avalanche. Obviously, Predators fans very familiar with the Avalanche, with their sweep of the Predators a few weeks ago. What has stood out to you about Colorado and the way that they've been able to get to this point in terms of the depth, the talent, the speed, everything that they bring to the table?
Well, and that's what it is, right? It's a combination of all those things. Like, when you look at what they did, obviously they played a weakened Nashville team, and you take that maybe with a grain of salt. I think it's a different series if Saros is playing. But then you look at what they did against St. Louis, who I covered in the first round, and I thought they were not as good as the Minnesota Wild at the beginning of that series, and they proved me wrong. A really deep, talented team with Jordan Binnington finding his game and playing like he did in 2019. And then the Colorado Avalanche just wore them down, and mentally were so strong, because you look at Game 5, which was an iconic game, right? McKinnon has that hat trick, the last goal of which will be on his highlight reel forever. It literally took me out of my press box seat. And you're like, oh, there it is, 4-3, they're going to win, series is over in 5 games. And then the Blues somehow come back and score, tie it, win it in overtime, and you're like, oh, now the Wild are in trouble. And then they just come back in Game 6, and they get all kinds of contributions from their third and their fourth line and suffocate the Blues and get that last goal in the last couple of seconds, and are like, this time you can't come back. And we're able to put the Blues out and move on and get a little bit of rest before having to face the Oilers. So, some days it's McKinnon and Landeskog that come at you. Some days it's Kadri. And then some days it's that third and fourth line. And they know who they are. And when I was covering it, one of the things that Bednar said that really struck me, and when they lost Game 5 and everybody started talking about, oh, the Avalanche can't get out of the second round, they're their own worst enemy, he's like, look, we believe, rightly or wrongly, that there's nobody in this league that can beat us other than ourselves. And I think that's true right now.
So, Sean, McDavid, Dreisaitl, I think it's great for the casual fan. I think it's good for the league to see Edmonton doing what they've done and to see those guys. I know McDavid gets separated out, but we're trying to bring Leon Dreisaitl awareness here in Nashville. Like, he's also an incredible player. But can those guys elevate things to the point of making this a really good series? I still have my doubts about that.
Well, I think they can, A, because they're such special players, you look offensively what they did against a really stout Calgary team. If you just tuned into the playoffs, you would be like, wow, Calgary, they don't really know how to play defense. And then you look at an 82-game sample size, and you look at Darryl Sutter's career as a coach, the one thing they know how to do is be structured and play defense. And I think, people are starting to learn that if you have really high-end elite talent, which does not grow on trees, you can break down other teams, right? And you can attack them. And so I think, the goaltending here in this series, not elite. In the East, it's super elite. In this series, neither guy is, probably in your top 10 when you start naming goaltender. So it's going to make it interesting. I mean, Mike Smith was an adventure for the Edmonton Oilers in round 2. Darcy Kuemper at times was an adventure for the Colorado Avalanche. Again, you look at that Game 5, they're up 3-1 going into the third period. They should have shut it down. He had a really bad run in giving up 3 goals, the last one in overtime from distance with nobody touching it. And you look and you wonder what McDavid and Dreisaitl and the people that they drag along, Zach Hyman and Nugent Hopkins and all of those players. Certainly it's going to be a series, and it's going to be entertaining as all get out.
Sean, what do you make of what Cale Makar has been able to do so far in these playoffs in terms of not only defensively the way that he's played the game, but at times offensively how he's been able to take over out there?
He controls the game. He reminds me of Brian Leetch. If anybody's old enough that's listening, because I'm an old man at this point, that got to see Brian Leetch in his prime, he was the guy who could just control the game. He decided what speed the game was played at. It was him. He dictated, we're going to play fast, we're going to play slow, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, because he had the puck, he knew what to do with it, he was nonplussed when he made a mistake. He could play close to 30 minutes a game without ever impacting him. And you know, at 23 years old, that's what Cale Makar's doing now. And it's hilarious to kind of be around. This is the first time I was around Colorado for an extended period this year. You know, and in game two, when they lost to the Blues, everybody's like, well, you know, hey, coach, Cale Makar hasn't been really good. And you know, can you win without him being really good? And he was elite. Like, you watch the game and you're like, oh my God, look at all the little things he's doing. But he made a turnover and it led to a goal. And, you know, he didn't have 3 points by his name when it was all over. And the bar is so high for that young man right now that when he's extraordinary, alarm bells start going off. And I think that fan base, in a good way, is spoiled, much like the Predators are with Roman Josi. Like, when you see Roman Josi play and he's ordinary, you're like, oh my God, what's wrong with him? And that performance, 29 other teams would take from their number one defenseman. They'd be like, can I sign up for that every day? So that's like, that's what Makar is. And the scary thing is, I don't think he's reached his ceiling yet. And the way that he's able to skate with the puck on his stick, he's like a forward, and forwards are not used to covering that. So it makes it really difficult to cover him, because usually when you're a forward in the defenseman at the puck, you're like, oh, phew, this is a little bit of a break. I know he's got two moves and he can't do them at speed, and if I push him towards the boards, I'm going to corner him. When you push Cale Makar towards the boards, he's got three options that you haven't even thought of yet that he's going to make a play with. So it's not always as brilliantly ostentatious as McDavid is, or again as MacKinnon was in that goal, the third goal he scored to finish his hat trick. But when you watch him, there's like five or six times in a game where you're just like, there's maybe three other players in the league that can do what that kid can do. And one of them, by the way, is playing in the other series in the Eastern Conference Final, and that's Adam Fox from the New York Rangers. Very yep. Similar player, his ability to take over the game. He showed it last night, the power play goal he scored to get them on the board and get them rolling in the first period. Just brilliance.
Well, yeah, I was gonna ask you about those Rangers. You brought up Brian Leetch. How about those Rangers? How surprised were you, Sean, that, you know, Carolina has been such a Jekyll and Hyde team, so great at home, that things turned out the way they did last night? And do you feel like there's just something special about this Rangers team that maybe they can actually unseat the champs?
I don't know if they can go that far. And full disclosure, I've picked against the Rangers in both these rounds. I didn't think that they were good enough to win. I still am somewhat surprised that they went into Carolina and won Game 7. I don't know, you know, if the tank ran empty for Carolina. Look, the two power play goals they gave up in the first period were just crushing. You can't, in a Game 7 with the desperation that's there, and the margins being so fine, you can't spot a team a 2-0 lead. It's a bridge too far, and there's very few teams that have overcome it in that kind of winner take all game. So, and then Ranta gets hurt, their goalie, and he's already their second string goalie. So the one argument you'd make against the New York Rangers is they've played a second-string goalie, a third-string goalie, a second-string goalie, and a third-string goalie in each series, and had to go to 7 to win each of them. Now they're playing arguably the best goalie in the world. I know New York fans will argue that Igor Shesterkin is ready to take that mantle. We're talking about a kid who's won 2 Stanley Cups, who in a Game 7 against Toronto just personally decided that they were not going to win, and they didn't win because of Vasilevsky. So to me, he is the best goalie in the world, and the things that they were able to do against Louis Domingue, who spent his whole year in the AHL, against Tristan Jarry, who played Game 7 on a broken foot, against Antti Raanta, who had a great run but was second to Freddie Anderson, and against Carolina's third-string goalie who had three games of NHL experience, they're not going to be able to do it against Vasilevsky. But I do believe that they're going to make this a far more interesting series than maybe I even think it's going to be, because they do have that special something. Look, they don't give up. They've won five elimination games in a row. And they have a goalie that can legitimately steal them a series. And that kind of confidence that you get from that, the Nashville Predators know that with Soros. And you know, it's invaluable, because you walk into a series believing you can win even when you're outgunned.
Sean Rourke from NHL.com on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. Sean, last thing for you. You know, we'll see what Tampa Bay is able to do and if they get past New York and what happens after that. But they're on the march right now to maybe a third consecutive Stanley Cup. When you factor in what they've done so far and what they still could do in this postseason, where does this run rank in your mind in terms of all-time runs? Because I was thinking about this the other day. In the salary cap era, to potentially pull off three cups in a row, that might be the greatest accomplishment in NHL history in my mind. What do you think of this run that Tampa Bay's put together?
I agree with you to a degree, because you think about the competitiveness, right? You think about what's happened in the last few years, the eight seeds that have made runs, you know, the fact that Minnesota and St. Louis had to play each other in the first round and they're separated by 4 points and they each had well over 100 points. Like, it's hard to win in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Now, it's hard for good teams to win. There's several good teams that went home in the first round. When you think about it, there's three or four teams that went home in the first round that you looked at and you said, if this all falls right, they could make it to the final. And they didn't get out of the first round. So for the Lightning to do this 3 years in a row, and I know people are going to say, well, the 1 year was the bubble, the other year was not a full season, blah, 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 blah. I don't care. Everybody played under the same rules. You know, everybody had an equal chance. And then now to do what they've done, and they swept the President's Trophy winners. They gave up three goals against a team that scored the most goals in the league. Like, they will play you 200 feet, and they will never give up, and they will find somebody to score big goals for them. You know, whoever it's been in the past, this year it's Nick Paul, who they got at the trade deadline, who scored two goals in Game 7 against Toronto. And it's Ross Colton from Robbinsville, New Jersey, who was drafted in the fourth round, played in the USHL, played college hockey. Nobody knew who he was. He scored the cup-winning goal last year. He scored one of the biggest goals in their history this year. And that's it. They're just relentless in what they do. They've been constructed so well. And again, we talked about goaltending. They have a goalie who, you know, is elite. He's Martin Brodeur. He's Patrick Waugh. He's that goalie when you're sitting there and a game's on a line, you don't even breathe heavy because you're like, that guy, he's never going to crack. The other guy, he's going to crack. So to me, if they're able to win three in a row and have a chance to go at four, which only, you know, a couple of teams in this league have done, and they were dominant dynasty teams that were able to stay together. Like, the Tampa Bay Lightning have not stayed together. Their core pieces have been together. They've redone their third and fourth lines for each championship. It's completely different. This year it's completely different than it was last year, and it's completely different than it was 2 years ago. So, you know, to me, unbelievable what they do. And the fact that John Cooper is never talked about as an elite coach in this league could be one of the biggest crimes that's ever been perpetrated in hockey.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Sean Rourke from NHL.com, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Sean, great stuff as always, brother. Appreciate you taking time to join us today.
All right, man. It's always my pleasure. Anytime you guys need anything, you know I'm here.
We love you. Thanks, for it. Buddy. Sean Rourke, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on the playoffs, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, including something from this Western Conference final matchup that I think is interesting as it relates to the Predators and the way that they're trying to win. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Sean Rourke from NHL.com for joining us in the last segment. John, the mailman on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says Rangers in six against Tampa Bay. Rangers in six. Joe, are you going to pick the blue shirts to take down the Lightning in this series?
I don't know, but John, the mailman, has been pretty consistent with his Rangers love.
Yes.
I'm thinking about that. You know, the Rangers, there is a little bit of like Preds 2017, you know, kind of feel, maybe a little bit. Certainly not the same situation with once you get to the conference finals, because I'd say I haven't seen the odds, but I'd say they're probably heavy underdogs, right, in this series.
I would assume.
But I also think there's something to, you know, yes, great points by Sean on, you know, some of the situations they took advantage of in terms of goaltending in the Carolina series, and now it's Vasilevsky, but they've got a guy too. And I think there's something to just the difficulty of pulling this off, you know, playing this deep year after year and answering the bell. I mean, Tampa Bay, they got it done, but they were, you know, they were on shaky ground against Toronto. Now then they just annihilated Florida. So, you know, they look like the favorite, and I get it. But I think this is going to be a more interesting series than probably some people around the league do.
I think it's got a chance to be a good series. I just – you will not see me pick against the Tampa Bay Lightning until they lose. They have reached that status with me. They've won 10 playoff series in a row. You will not see me pick against them.
So when they lose, then you're going to pick against them? That's what you're telling me?
I'm saying that they're open to being picked against the next year after that.
I got you. Okay, yes. I got you. I retroactively picked them to lose.
I retroactively changed my mind. Tampa is going to lose this year. I'm looking forward to that one. Like, it's a different feel to it than Colorado and Edmonton, which, by the way, Colorado is more of a favorite in their series than Tampa Bay is in their series against New York, which I don't guess necessarily surprises me. I think the depth that Colorado has is pretty outstanding. That series, though, it brings to mind one thing, and I was thinking about this yesterday. We talk so much about the Predators and their path to win and how you get back to being a Stanley Cup champion. And we'll get to some interesting results from Adam Vingan's kind of fan poll that he threw up last week at The Athletic. We'll get to those coming up here in just a few minutes. But, you know, I'm thinking about this matchup in the Western Conference Final. You know, the Preds have not had the luxury of picking at the top of the draft. They've been a very consistent playoff team, as multiple people have pointed out, and it's very difficult to get elite talent that way via the draft when you do that. You're staring at a Western Conference Final right now with Nathan McKinnon, Cale Makar, Leon Draisaitl, Connor McDavid. I mean, the list goes on and on. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins was a top pick. I mean, the list goes on and on in terms of players in this series that were drafted very high. If you're a Predators fan, does this make you view the method of trying to win any differently? And we'll get to a very interesting question in Vingan's piece coming up here in just a few minutes that kind of relates to this. But you're talking about teams that were really bad for an extended stretch of time. They got elite players, and now both of them are in the Western Conference Final. Now, we'll see if this means anything in terms of long-term sustainability for the Avalanche and the Oilers. The Avalanche have some guys that they're just going to lose this offseason because they don't have enough salary cap room. And the Oilers, we'll see if they can continue to add enough around McDavid and Draisaitl with those two contracts. But these are elite-level players that were taken really high in the draft that have now found their way into the conference finals against each other. I wonder if you're the Predators, how does that make you feel about the method of trying to avoid the tank or the rebuild or whatever word you want to throw in there as long as possible?
Yeah, well, and you know, look, it's I just think the Preds don't have the stomach for that. And I think some fans who say they want it right now wouldn't have the stomach for it. But look, the thing about that is, and you know, like I've heard, you know, Darren Donovan Chase, they've talked, Darren has been very vocal about this, and I agree with him. Like, okay, if this is what you want, you're still going to show up, right? Like, I get that. But let's be clear. Like, when Chicago was in the dead zone and they were building that team, no one was going to the games.
Oh, they're getting back there now, too.
Well, they are, and then all of a sudden, again, in the city of Chicago, the sport of hockey no longer exists again. It's amazing. But Colorado, I mean, you know, those fans weren't my Aunt Mary's a day one season ticket holder for the Avs, and no one was going to those games when they stunk. You know, it's just how it is. So that's like all of it goes together. You know, like, yeah, there's going to be the hardcore fans that still want to show up, but of course, people are going to show up to watch something that's entertaining that you have a chance to win, and they're not going to show up if you don't. But there's a benefit to it too. There can be. The problem is there's also teams that have gone that route that haven't gotten players like that or haven't then had the resulting ensuing success or have been stuck in that purgatory for way too long. So that's the downside of it.
Well, I mean, the other side of the coin that if you're the Predators you're pointing to is, I mean, it's basically the Lightning. Now, I know Stamkos was a high pick, but Kucherov wasn't a high pick. I mean, it's not like Tampa Bay has spent a ton of time at the bottom of the league building to this point. So there are different ways to go about doing it. I just, in the West, those are the teams that you have to play against. So you have to play against Nathan MacKinnon, and you have to play against Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. So how do you go about combating that? Like, that's, you know, they've got elite players in the East too. So it's not like they don't. Tampa Bay just took down Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and those guys and Jonathan Huberdeau and Barkov. So, you know, Tampa Bay is kind of a different animal at the moment. But if you're the Predators going about winning, like, how do you have to, if you're not going to be bad enough to go get one of these guys, how do you have to construct your team to where you can take down Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Nathan MacKinnon, those guys on a consistent basis throughout the course of four series in a playoff run? Like, that's the way you have to think, and that's very difficult to do.
Yeah, well, you've got to make great choices wherever you're picking players, right? You got to have way more hits than misses. You have to get lucky to some extent. I mean, Roman Josi counts as getting lucky still, doesn't it?
Sure.
I mean, you're talking about a great player, a Norris winner who you got in the second round. So you got to do things like that. You got to make great choices. But the thing with the Preds is it's different than some of those teams is you do have a player at the most important position who I think is good enough to, in a particular spring, take you on a run, yeah, right? And that's the thing when we talk about the core of the team, I do think that Saros gets lost a little bit in that discussion. I definitely think it's worth saying, you know, worth talking about, is this core, you know, these top line forwards and everything, is it good enough, even if you support them, to actually do anything? Totally fair question. I'm not sure it is. But you do have a player at the most important position who I think is good enough to elevate a group. And I think that's largely what we saw 5 years ago from Pekka.
Coming up next, the fan survey results that the Predators or that Adam Bingen put up on the Predators last week at the Athletic are out. And I got to tell you, there are some very interesting results in this poll. We'll get to that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe, the results of the Predators fan survey that Adam Bingen put up at the Athletic are out. And I got to tell you, there's a lot of interesting results in this piece, including one that will make you very happy at the bottom of this page.
Did you see my comment? My comment's on there. Check out my comment.
I'll have to go check it out. I have not seen it yet. We'll get to that one here in just a few seconds. But going back to the conversation that we had last segment about, you know, the elite talent in the Western Conference Final. You've got McDavid. You've got Draisaitl. You've got MacKinnon. How do the Predators go about trying to win if that's not the route that they're comfortable taking? Adam Ingen asked this question in his Preds fan survey. Would you support a full-scale rebuild if it meant picking number one in the draft at least once? Now, the Predators have made it clear they don't really have any interest in undergoing a full rebuild. I mean, that's not something that they want to do at this point. Now, we'll see what happens if Philip Forsberg does not resign, which, as of today, it is almost June, and he is still not resigned at this point. So we'll see what happens on that front. But 62% of Predators fans polled in this survey say that they would support a full-scale rebuild if it meant picking number one in the draft at least once. So that means 62% say yes, 38% say no. That is Hendersonville High School math for you at its finest. What do you make of that response, Joe? I thought that was pretty interesting. 62% say, yep, bring on the full rebuild if it means picking number one in the draft at least once, which, by the way, is not a guarantee.
Well, you hit on the most surprising result to me by far. I'm surprised to see that because I feel like the results for the most part are consistent, pretty much consistent with my expectations. And by the way, way more down on Poyle this year than a year ago and things like that. But I'm not surprised by that. And I think the results are consistent to me with invested, educated fans. I mean, you know, they subscribe to Vingan's athletic coverage, you know. But in all seriousness, I mean, I said this last week, you know, people who like subscribe to read about a team, things like that, like you have a pretty good feeling that they're probably like quite invested in the team, right? So yeah. I feel like there's a little less like just random Twitter, you know, like panicky reaction to things. For example, also in this, the Hines, remember, I did the poll on Twitter. It was 60-40 against Hines. Right now, this is a little bit different question, but indifferent, for it, against it on the extension. Indifferent and for it, indifferent wins 41%. That's fine. For it, 29%. But between them, that's 70.7% are not against it. That is more what I expected with the Twitter poll. So to me, that is consistent with kind of what I would think and expect from, you know, from, I'm trying to think of the best term, from invested fans, from well-schooled fans on a team. I'm surprised by the number one pick question. I am. I'm definitely surprised. I would have guessed about the reverse of that. I would have guessed about 60-40 or even maybe more than that, saying no, that they don't want. Again, that's basically tanking, which, by the way, Gover on the text line pointed out, and we've talked about it before, Buffalo is a great cautionary tale along those lines. So that one surprised me, man. I'm surprised.
It surprised me a little bit, too. Now, I'll say, and Vingan put this in the piece, too. Says the follow-up question is this: would the fans who voted in support of a rebuild show up to games if the Predators plummeted to the bottom of the standings? And that's what we just talked about. My guess is, for a lot of people, the answer is no, because sure. You want to spend your money on teams that win. So it's probably a large reason why the Predators have no interest in doing this to begin with. But I found that interesting. You know, that's the thing about the NHL. Like, you can tank in the NFL, and if you suck bad enough, you're going to get the first overall pick. That's not necessarily the case in the NHL. You might, but it's a draft lottery. So you're just giving yourself the best chances to go get the first overall pick. So, you know, right. The Predators had a chance to get the first overall pick 2 years ago. Now, it was a very slim chance, but they, you know, with the bubble situation being what it was and with them being out in the play-in series, they were technically a lottery team that year, and they had a chance to get the first overall pick. So you don't necessarily have to be the worst team in the NHL to go get it, but that certainly helps your odds. I found that question and that response pretty interesting. Now, I would be interesting to see, like, if it ever gets to the point where the Predators have to do that and they have to tear things down and go through a rebuild, it's one thing to say you support it at first when you're in year two and maybe year three of a rebuild. How much support does it have then? That's the question you got to ask yourself, because it's not always a 2 or 3 year turnaround.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up the 2 years ago thing, because, you know, the Preds did not get it, of course. The Rangers did. And Alexei Lafreniere, that's how I say his name, is a good player on the kids' lines. Good. But is that transformational number one pick for a franchise? I think he's gonna be a very good player in this league for a long time. Great.
Yeah.
But that's not the number one pick that changes your franchise.
Well, to that point, we got a texter on the text line that says the past 5 years, here's the first overall picks: Powers, Lafreniere, Hughes, Dahlin, Hischier. Like, I think all of those guys are good. Are any of those guys franchise-altering, elite Connor McDavid-like players? Like, I mean, I'm not even saying you have to be Connor McDavid. Because Connor McDavid, the more I watch him play, the more I'm convinced he might end up being the best player to ever play the game. So I'm not saying you got to be that. But, like, Nathan McKinnon's and Connor McDavid's and Sidney Crosby's, yes, they were all first picks. That's not all first picks are created equal. So not it's not just about being bad enough to get those guys. It's being bad enough at the right time, and that can be very difficult to time up that way.
Yeah, and you just can't. I mean, you just can't try to plan on that. You know,
no.
I mean, it's just like you said. There's not a lottery. I mean, you know, the thing about McDavid is, of course, before this year too, it was also okay. Well, he is great, and by the way, what has that gotten you? Well, okay, well, that's out the window now. It's gotten you something. And I think it's going to get you more things in the future because he's just that freaking good. Oh, and by the way, Leon Draisaitl is okay too.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
But yeah, you just can't – like to me, I think a rebuild where you may have to step back from the playoffs for a year or two, I could – like to me, that is more sensible. Okay, you may have to trade away a key core player to try to get a two – you know, younger guys or whatever, like, you know, to go younger, get worse for a little bit, try to build around that and keep, and then go forward. That to me is the rebuild. This scenario is try to plummet, try to bottom out, which I think that's dumb. And yet 62% of people are saying thumbs up.
We're discussing the Predators fan survey at The Athletic that Adam Vinion has put together. The results are out. I just tweeted that out at @RStanleyNHL. On Twitter. Another very interesting response here that I was interested to see. And the question from Adam was, quote, on a scale from 1 to 5, with 5 being the highest, how confident are you that David Poile can return the team to Stanley Cup contender status? So 1 through 5, how confident are you in David Poile? The most popular answer was 2 at 38.4. 3 was 26.2. Only 2.2% were 5. So I expected 5 to probably be the lowest number, but I thought it'd be higher than 2.2%. Most common answer was 2 and then 3 for David Poile.
Yeah, so if you go by the the year over year trend, right? As Vingan points out, so it was 11.6 went 1. So basically, like the worst numbers, right? 1 or 2, like way down on Poile, right? It was 40. I'm doing math in real time. This could be dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
It was 41.8% a year ago that were like 1 or 2. Boo. No, 41.8. And now it is 61.1, if I'm doing my math correct.
Yeah.
I think I am.
You are
61.1. So essentially a 20% increase in way out on Poile. And I'd say that's significant. And again, it's like, it's interesting because I feel like the end of last year and the turnaround and the good showing in the playoffs and all that stuff before that, like I'd be interested to see the results of this as of like, you know, a third of the way into last season.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because at that point, it was like, I mean, it started to look inevitable, like David Poile was going to be fired.
It looked like the wheels were totally falling off. Yeah.
And then, so then it's like, oh, and now you're seeing some things that were working out, some young guys that were working out, some prospects. All, you know, they played a lot better. John Hines, again, I think gets a lot of credit for what they did. And so it was, I think, actually kind of favorable still for Poile after it was all said and done last year. But this year you have the bad stuff is late, and I think that's part of it too.
We are reacting to the Preds fan survey released at The Athletic by Adam Vinion. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. More of your thoughts to get to next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Rowe here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. So Rex Rowe with possibly his greatest coffee mug of all time that he just flashed on the screen. It's great stuff. Glorious Domination bringing us back in. By the way, Joe, that is the good news on this Predators fan survey for you. Adam Vinken throwing it out there. Which aspect of the Predators in-game experience would you eliminate? At number one on the list, Glorious Domination. 34.1% of the vote, 34.1% want to eliminate Glorious Domination. That was the top result in terms of the Predators in-game experience that most people want to eliminate.
Hugely disappointing. As I said in the comments in all caps, how could this not be 100%? Come on, 34%. Come on, people. Listen to the song.
Answer.
Yeah, but that's got to be a way higher percent. Leave Fang Fingers alone. How are more than 20% of people most worried about Fang Fingers? I like Fang Fingers. Sometimes if you're not sure exactly who's called the penalties and who the penalty's on, you know, and Paul, like, you know, Fang Fingers, and then you know that it's, yeah. You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. It's fun. It's a fun little thing. The fans do. Come on, leave that alone. Power play song, I guess we can talk about that. I think it's fine. Okay, you can switch that up. I'm not against, like, switching it up and trying to maybe just mix it up and make it less predictable. That's fine. But, dude, Glorious Domination is easily the only answer here. I mean, it has to go. And to me, I'm concerned that basically two-thirds of people are okay with it. That, to me, is my takeaway, and it's very alarming.
So you're going glass half empty on this. I thought this was going to be a good news for you, good day for you. But it's not good enough.
The only way, like, this is not enough to me to eject it.
Like, I mean, Vinken even says in the article, in parentheses, Joe Rexroth will be especially pleased with this result, and that's just not the case.
We're not here. This is not like winning a trophy. Everybody wins a trophy, okay? Like, the only way to actually get rid of this thing is for it to be overwhelmingly the number one answer. So I am not optimistic now that the Preds are going to see these results and act on it. But if they would have seen like 88% for Glorious Domination, then they might be like, okay, well, this clearly is a problem. I mean, I'm telling them it is a problem because it tears away at my inner fibers when I hear every note of that song. But I just don't know if everybody feels the same way. Clearly they don't.
By the way, there was apparently a vote for Creed for Scott Stapp to be permanently barred from performing on stage, which Vinken referred to as borderline blasphemy in the piece.
That is so mad.
Leave Scott Stapp alone.
Whoever Paul M is, I love you, Paul M. You are you're my spirit animal, Paul M, for saying that.
Oh, gosh. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. April in Portland says, Joe, I know you hate Glorious, but I appreciate y'all playing it. So it seems like 66%, if I could talk, good Lord, percent of people like it. So, April, bring it back in there to you.
Yeah. So you're part of the problem, April. Again, we used to be friends, no longer.
I kind of am starting to like it a little bit.
Wow.
The song.
We'll hear more of it.
Right, Rob?
Yeah. Could be a good day.
You're just trolling me. Please, I pray you're just trolling me.
It's got a nice little ring to it.
By the way, I thought the Tim McGraw, someone asked on the text about the Tim McGraw song, the goal line. Was that not included in Vingan's questions?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, that's interesting because
that's part of the other that you could write in.
Yeah, and there was, I mean, what other got a lot too, which is probably a lot of that. But I know some people who don't like that. I do. Again, we've talked about it. You need that song to be something that your opponent will absolutely hate when they get scored on. And I think it's perfect.
What's the other thing? Like, what's the goal song out there that if you're a Predators fan, you're like, yeah, love that one. Let's do that.
Right, right. Exactly.
Now, I am not necessarily opposed to, and they've tried this. I don't know if they've done this a lot in the NHL, but they've tried this at other levels of hockey, like personalize each goal song. So like if Philip Forsberg scores, whatever Forsberg wants to play, just blast that thing, man. But some people like that. Some people hate it.
No, troll the opponent. It's all about trolling the opponent. That's what it should be. And, you know, Michelle's favorite song is very effective at that, for example. So that's trolling the opponent. Speaking of the tech side, real fast, I just wanted to bring this up before the show ends. I've been taking some crap from people on my rant about fireworks on Memorial Day, Ron in particular, back and forth. Here's my whole thing, which I should have said during my rant. So Memorial Day, I've seen this before too. It's like, happy Memorial Day, you know? And it's like, well, but it's, you know, it's not a, Memorial Day is not a celebration holiday, okay? It's remembering people who gave their lives in service of the country. So 4th of July is celebrating the birthday of the country. It's a pure on celebration. Shoot out those fireworks. Memorial Day to me is more of a solemn reflection holiday.
Yeah.
Does this make sense? So, and well, Ron says I sound old. Yeah, Ron says I sound old. And that's fine. But I was stunned. A bunch of people in the text are like, oh, yeah, we had hot fireworks here and there. I didn't realize that. I really didn't know that communities were doing like full firework things for Memorial Day. I've never heard of that before.
That almost led to another rant by me, because it's not really my place to say this because I'm not in the military, but I have enough friends who are in the military that I know are bothered by this, that I feel like it's okay for me to say it. Like, it's also like, there's nothing wrong with thanking veterans and thanking people who serve in the military, but yesterday's really not the day for that. It's for people who died. And I know, like, there are friends of mine that are in the Navy and the Army. I got Air Force friends. They all just get so annoyed when people start thanking them that day, when it's about the people who have actually died.
Right. Right.
I don't know how we got off on that tangent, but I did.
Well, but that's a legitimate, you know, complaint for sure. It goes, it's a little bit different, but it kind of goes on with happy Memorial Day. It's like, well, it's really not it. I mean, it's an appreciation day. It's not a fireworks day. We can all agree on this, Ron.
I don't know if everybody agrees.
Okay. There's
fireworks shows popping up all around, man.
I actually have uncovered something today that is bothersome, more than just like the random wackadoo in my neighborhood who was shooting them off the other day.
Let's go to Junie on the text line. It says, Preds fans are spoiled, in my opinion. The team makes the playoffs 15 of the last 18 years. Most people didn't even expect them to make the playoffs because it was well known they'd go young and try to develop talent. Yeah, Vezina and Norris Trophy nominees on your team. Just because they look good in the beginning of the season doesn't mean a young core is expected to sustain throughout year one of consistent playing time. The Preds overachieved, in all capital letters, and should look to improve based off this past season's results. So, Junie, not much time for this Preds fans result on the Athletics. Says Preds fans were too spoiled.
Yeah, okay. Malkin sucks. Get out of here, Junie. I'm just kidding.
Get out of here, Malkin.
Get out of here with your Pittsburgh, your terrible towels.
No, he's free agent.
That's right. Those are fair points, but you know, we've gone over this a lot. Like the preseason expectations, they help shape the discussion. It gets like Junie saying that, you now have joined the members of the organization who have said that like 97 times per person on average. You know, like, we get it. You overachieved, and yes, it was a year to get younger. Look, this is kind of goes along with Willie's thing, which is the plan as stated. This was a year of you're seeing some young guys. You aren't really expected to make the playoffs. You did. And now it's, what do you do this offseason to add you some of that cap space, and what can you become? And that's all fair. And if you lose Forsberg, it won't be very good.
They will not be. Joe, very quickly, another result that really stood out to me, which we'll get into a little bit more tomorrow, but the do we want to hear directly from ownership about the direction of the franchise? Almost 80% of Predators fans said yes. It's at 79.3. Almost 80% say yes. Last year, around 60% said no. That's a pretty massive change on the directly hearing from ownership question that Adam threw out there.
Yeah, so I think that is interesting for sure. And again, I think it's a no-brainer. I think it's a no-brainer. Some people bringing up Jerry Jones or whatever. That's not what we're talking about. We're just talking about, you know, just someone with a stake in the team speaking to the fans. You know, the fans are specifically paying these people. So I think it's a pretty obvious thing to me.
Well, the results are dramatically different this time around than they were last time. No question about that. We'll get more into that tomorrow. Got a lot to get to on tomorrow's edition of Robbie and Rexro. That's going to do it for us today. The DDC is coming up next. You're listening to ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game.